Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Sam Edwards. I'm third generation Cure Master from S. Wallace Edwards & Sons in Surrey, Virginia. We support the Heritage Radio Network because we believe in the cause and what they're doing. They're supporting family-raised livestock, small family farms, certified humane, pasture-raised, antibiotic-free. Basically, we take the products from Heritage Foods USA and make them into Serrano-style hams, prosciutto-style hams, bacon, sausage, like my grandfather did. You can find us at SurreyFarms.com or VirginiaTraditions.com.
Well, here we are. It's Sunday. That means it's the main course. We're broadcasting out of Roberta's restaurant at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm Patrick Martins, host of the main course. We're engineered and produced by Jack Inslee. Hey, Jack.
Hey, how's it going?
So congratulations. We did that big party. All the hosts showed up.
Everyone showed up.
Even though it was in the middle of nowhere in Bushwick, people still made the trek out. Even some of our, you know, older hosts or out-of-town hosts seem to make their find their way over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, the Jersey guys even came out. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, they were the first ones there.
It's true.
It's inverse of ratings. The lowest rated show
Yikes.
Came first. No, just kidding. Well, I mean, they don't broadcast exclusively for us. So,
exactly.
I mean, I think they understand that. But so, yeah, it was a really great party. How did you think it went? Did the host give you a good vibe?
Yeah, everyone. It was a lot of positivity, a great time. And like you said, everybody showed up. That was really the best part.
Yeah.
The little dive bar in Bushwick and all these hosts showed up.
It's definitely interesting. There's a lot of potential in that room, you know. It's an untapped potential for now because we don't have the, you know, we can still be denied, essentially. You know, we don't have millions of Americans listening to us. But the potential was overwhelming and the positive spirit was overwhelming, you know. I always wondered, like, would we lose shows on this network? Would people quit? And I don't think anyone's quit.
Nope.
Ever.
Never.
So we've canceled a show, but almost.
We
banned someone, but that doesn't count as a cancellation. So, well, congratulations, Jack. That was a really well-done party, and I recommend everyone try that restaurant we went to for drinking and for eating. It's called Tandem, T-A-N-D-E-M. And what is it, 217 Troutman?
236 Troutman.
236 Troutman. So, separate from that, how was the rest of the week, Jack? I see you've selected four shows to talk about.
Some heady stuff this week. Well, you know, the week started with Beer Fest. That's where we last left listeners off. Mm-hmm. So we should tell them we finished as a top five team.
We were, this is my first time out, actually, since that day.
Yeah, exactly.
It was very exhausting, but it was one of the most fun and, you know, just raucous events I've ever been to.
Indeed, and I think Bill Saxelby has a Lifetime Achievement Award from Heritage Radio. Officially.
He really deserves one. He was our big ringer, and in fact, we overused him, you know, I think, a little bit too much.
But like LeBron on the Cavs, you know?
Yeah, I just go to him for too many shots, and, you know, you do ask a lot. Or, you know, like CC Sabathia for the Yankees, pitching him three times
exactly.
in the series. So
yeah,
who else was on the show?
Some pretty heady stuff. I mean, last week, Katie had on a foodborne illness lawyer who's fought for some people who've gotten E. coli from Jack in the Box, and he was talking about all these reports lately that there's arsenic in apple juice. Some of the leading offenders being Welch's grape juice, Walmart's Grape Value, and Mott's apple juice. So pretty intense stuff. You should check that out to learn more about arsenic and apple juice.
Do you have a clip from that, or is it just basically saying don't trust massive greedy conglomerates?
Well, that's, yeah, you could say that. That's pretty much the synthesis of it. You
it's
know,
interesting.
It's no surprise
they just
that the big
cut
companies
corners.
Are, yeah, exactly.
You would think they would be the last ones who should be cutting corners. And in fact, all the rules, the safety rules, are built towards little guys breaking the rules.
Right.
When in reality, those big guys are the ones like allowing for arsenic. Now, are these levels of arsenic that can make people sick and die?
Well, no. Originally, the levels found were not considered harmful by the FDA, but the levels have been up and up in each subsequent report. So it's kind of, you know, of concern. And we're importing a lot of it from China and elsewhere. So it's a concern. And Katie's show has been really good about that, you know, just tapping into the food politics and all of this policy stuff that affects us. So
I've always said Katie's is one of the 28 best shows on the network. Now, that's Straight No Chaser.
Yes.
And she broadcasts right after my show. Is she broadcasting today?
Yeah, she is.
Who did she have on? Did she tell you?
I don't know yet.
Okay, yeah, I know. You're just recovering from the party.
Yeah, it was a long weekend.
Now, you also tagged the Lost Art of Cooking from A Taste of the Past. We always talk about Linda's shows. What did Linda Palacio talk about?
Well, this was kind of against your point. You know, her guest was saying the people should be cooking more, and we've lost our art of cooking, and I do know how you feel about
that. No, by the way, I've completely changed my mind.
Oh, really?
I've often noticed now that it's the opposite of what I think sometimes is the answer. You know, like I'm like, I can't drink so much. So sometimes the answer is like more intense drinking. Just sometimes. You know, less of it, but more intense. You know, this whole cold turkey thing is a very dire, like, American situation. And so I'm kind of like open to this new thing. And since if you compare heritage foods to commodity foods, if you really truly compare apples to apples, then our food is more expensive. So what I'm trying to, now my new argument is, in if you eat out fast food four times a week, just go out one less time, don't eat fast food, and in return buy some heritage Boston butt, even if you have to FedEx it to your house, and that actually is not that much. We have Romy and Amy here in the station, and you know, we have this thing about elitism. You know, we're constantly, everyone's like, "Oh, your foods are so elite, and it's just for a select few." And I got to the point where I think that's certainly classist. And it's semi-racist. And we actually had Nicole Taylor, the host of Hot Grease, be like, it is officially semi-racist to call those foods elitist, to not encourage people to aspire to the best tasting foods.
Yeah.
And it, like I was just talking about Armani, no one goes and protests in front of Armani because it's an expensive version of clothes. So no one should protest at a small family farm because that's an expensive version of food. It can coexist. No one has to attack it. You know, it doesn't attack anyone. And so, you know, I don't think a poor person in inner city Detroit should not be told that a heritage turkey is still the best one. And also, a heritage turkey costs $70. Most people can afford that. That ends up coming to half the price of a movie per person. As long as we're staying half the price of a 2.5 hour movie at the theater with no popcorn or anything, we're within the realm of acceptability. So it's a very interesting thing. So now, Jack, I am officially pro eating at home in place of a fast food thing. So if you
just
could re-tag all the shows where I ever, because, you know, I've always said, you know, we should open more fast food joints that give hot dogs, or, you know, buy locally and blah, blah, blah. You know, you'll never teach people to cook and blah, blah, blah. Like, people won't really change and all of a sudden start cooking kale, you know, especially if they have two jobs and five kids. And, you know, it's hard to just say cook at home more. But now I actually do really believe that if you can cook one time instead of fast food, you'll only spend $3 or $4 more a week, and you'll be eating the highest level of gastronomy equal to anybody else.
Well, you gave Will, the guy who does our videos and photos, you gave him a bone-in maple cured ham that he cooked for a holiday party last night, and it was a huge hit. And these are not foodies, they're just regular people, and it's an, you know, easy stuff like that. I know for people my age, it's a good way to approach the cooking from home thing.
So is food designed to be addictive, you think? I mean, and in what way is that?
That's what he was saying. Yeah, you know, it's like, the humans were pre-wired to want calories, fat, and salt, and the industry takes advantage of it. And the guest said, you know, who can eat one potato chip? And that's by design, and they want you to keep coming back to these things.
That was actually an ad campaign for a potato chip company.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, no, they make
Once
things
you pop,
addictive.
You can't stop.
Yeah, exactly. They, you know, they know what they're doing in those places. And now the final thing you tag, Clark Wolf was on Taste Matters with Mitchell Davis,
Vice
President of the
Clark?
James
I'm
Beard
sure you
Foundation.
Know Clark, right?
Yeah. Yeah, he's a tough cookie. I mean, some people don't like him, but I mean, he seems to have been really energetic in the food world. Like, what did he come on and talk about?
He spoke a mile a minute, and he dominated the conversation, but he did claim that Las Vegas is the next trendy food city. And it was
wow, he's really going out on a limb on
yeah,
that one.
Well, he made some interesting points. You know, he says that most farms are closer to Las Vegas than San Francisco or L.A. out there.
Is he also going out on a limb and predicting that the Indianapolis Colts will lose today?
Oh, man.
But no, Las Vegas is. It's a big food city. It has been a big art city. Like, a lot of people keep their art collections. Those casinos have like impressionist paintings and stuff hanging, and there's a lot of money there. And it is a very interesting thing. So what was his point? Just that it's going to like rival New York and San Francisco for food?
Right. Yeah, Mitchell had him on kind of just to predict some of the new trends, and that was his claim.
Well, it sounds like it's been a great week. Considering how much drinking you did, I congratulate you, Jack.
Yes.
These past two of the past 7 days, I want to say I was really happy. I turned on New York One, and Bread and Life, which is going to be one of the major campaigns for the Heritage Radio Network across the network, across all the shows, to bring support to, bring attention to. We're going to try to get restaurants to have like a 5% week where they get 5% of their alcohol proceeds to this charity. It's called Bread and Life. It's the largest emergency food organization in Brooklyn. They do thousands of meals a day. And they had a mandate this year to only supply local food products for their annual Christmas baskets. So it's vulgar sometimes to put a number to things, but I just want to show you how much power a group like that can have. They invested $60,000 with Heritage to support New York State local farms and these cured hams. So I just delivered a truckload yesterday, and I actually got to see a little glimpse of one of those hams being put into one of those baskets this morning on New York One. So we're big fans. Anthony Butler, congratulations. Thank you so much.
That's amazing.
All the farmers, thank you. And we look forward to a 2012 where we hammer home the Bread and Life message.
I look forward to recording many PSAs for them.
Yes,
hope they like my voice.
And don't worry, you always have Katie. Wow, we got a love gram to Katie.
Yeah.
And the info,
that's
like,
right.
I love her voice.
Yeah,
and how
you
can
saw
I
that.
Get more of it?
Well, somebody on iTunes actually reviewed Erica Wides' show and said, "The host's voice is so attractive, I could listen to her read the dictionary."
Oh, brother.
That is a true story.
So we have a great show on today. We're going to talk, internationalize it a little bit. We have old friends of mine. I've known them basically. I think my first email from Amy was back in like 1998 when I was still in Italy, and I didn't know what to do with the email because I still didn't know anybody. She was ahead of her time. She was ahead of my time to even contact me. But years later, we came back. We have a lot of mutual friends. She does amazing work. They have kind of institutional restaurants, you know, like really part of New York City. Her name's Amy Bessa and her husband Romy Doratan, and they're both here. They're both Filipino, and they have a very massive project trying to, you know, bring gastronomy and culture and nutrition to the Philippines. It's going to interact here with the States as well. And then we're going to end with, they're going to stay in studio and talking about kind of holiday traditions. We're going to have Sam Edwards and talk about the significance of the Christmas ham and things of that nature. And we'd love to pick your brains on what the traditions are, you know, in the East. So we'll take a quick break and open up with Amy and Romy. That was the now defunct Cherry Holmes leading us in. Last time you guys were on was June 2009, even before you opened your new restaurant, Purple Yam. So let's start off just to contextualize it for the people out there. They might know you from these places. You have a revised edition of your cookbook coming out, and you redo the final chapter through the lens of Purple Yam instead of the legendary Cendrillon, which you had in Soho for a number of years.
Right. The first edition came out November of 2006, and the publisher, Stuart Tabori and Chang, they've been very happy with the sales. And they said that I think we've sold about 30,000, and they're, to them, that's pretty good. I was pretty disappointed.
You wanted
I was
it to
hoping
be more?
I wanted it to be a million, but, you know, we'll be happy with that.
It's real interesting. People understand, you know, Filipino food. They get where it's from and all that. And yet, I think, wasn't it you that told me that there's only a couple of true Filipino restaurants in all New York City, all five boroughs, or maybe four or five?
You know, I really don't want to get into the what is true. That's one thing I really want to fight against is like people claiming that they have the authentic food, because mm-hmm. no one really can claim that. And as far as I'm concerned, I've started researching Filipino food starting in the 90s, you know, because I left the Philippines in the 70s because of martial law. And I was considered myself an exile. Mm-hmm. And I finally was able to find my way home in 1991. And ever since then, I've been going home researching the food. And, you know, after about 20 years, I still say I'm ignorant about the food. I barely scratched the surface.
Is it like Italy, where every hill, every bend in the river, there's a new culinary tradition?
Well, you know what? The food of the Philippines is really based on nature. You know, it is the flavor. It's based on the flavors of nature. And we are an archipelago with thousands of, coastline. And recently, there are all these scientists that have from California that went to the Philippines and claimed that we have one of the most diverse environment in the whole world. And every time they go there, they discover thousands of species. Mm. So that just, that is just a representative sample of what people can eat. Mm-hmm. And so
there must be certain common ingredients that go across the archipelago, like the yam.
The purple yam.
Is that one?
No, actually, the purple yam is a very difficult root to grow.
Because it's purple? Because I know purple was always a very hard color to make back in the old days.
Probably.
That's why only the emperors had it.
No, but see, this is what I discovered just going back there this year. And that it takes a year. You know, they cut it up, they root it, and then they put it in the ground, and they wait a whole year. Mm-hmm. And they have no clue whether that will grow into a plant or not. Mm. And you can't dig it up to find out. You just have to find out a year later if it grows.
If it grows.
Yeah.
But talking about your book coming out, how is the yam different than Cendrillon in terms of its, what do you do differently? I ask Romy, the chef, the guy in the kitchen, hands of steel there, cutting up all those vegetables. It's a delicious restaurant for anyone. It's 1317 Courtelou Avenue?
1314.
So how is it different?
Not much. Well, we have added other more Asian stuff. Like Korean, and also we're going more on the Thai, Malaysian, and Indonesian route also. Hmm.
And I think one thing that I'm very proud of that we were able to carry from Cendrillon is the whole concept of using heritage meats mm-hmm. for traditional Filipino or Asian dishes. And that's something that I want to... to tell Filipinos that, because many Filipinos have no clue how to judge what is good food.
Right.
and most most not just Filipinos, many people. And I always say you have to go back to the ingredients. So if you want, because many people make this mistake. Oh, you know, I really spiked up my adobo with chicken bouillon.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, and I'm really horrified. Like, do you really think that putting a ton of MSG into your adobo is going to make it better? You know, if you want to make a good adobo, you start with, let's say, a heritage meat.
Right.
And it's not really that the fact that you are reinventing the wheel. You're just going back to something that has been done before.
Before.
Like, the native chickens that Filipinos used, like, 2 or 3 decades ago.
Isn't that where the chicken originated, the Philippines? Or no?
I don't know.
No, the chicken did originate somewhere like that.
Well, we had wild chickens.
Yeah. I think that might have been the only place in the world where chickens were wild, and then it became the number one meat in the world.
I don't know, but if you look at archival recipes of the adobo, it's amazing that they took them like 2 hours to cook them, and that they add a lot of water. And that already shows you that that's the native chicken, where, you know, it's not full of salt and liquids that the modern chicken has.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we actually used your heritage chickens for a big party.
Nice to know someone's using them.
Yes, and you know, they were kind of like not like the tender falling off the bone,
which is why people shy away from buying it.
Yes, but you know, it was a whole. It was in D.C. It was a big party. It was all Filipinos, and we explained to them, and many people actually connected with it because. Mm-hmm. Native chicken is now coming back in the Philippines. It's like it's very in now to use native chicken.
And you hunt them? Or you're saying native chickens, not wild, just native farm raised?
Yes, and they're you know, not penned up, and
right.
So they're free range, and they come from the Philippines.
Now, a lot of what we've been talking about has to do with you know, the big reason you're here today is you have just established the Ang Saraling Atin, ASA Culinary Heritage Institute.
It's Ang Sariling Atin.
Oh, I'm so surprised I didn't pronounce that right. So,
it means our own food. It's going back to
Jack,
our
that's
food.
Spelled the way it sounds, by the way, for the tagging.
Thanks.
So now it is your idea is to connect the concept of culinary preservation to the state of the contemporary palate.
Yes.
Which I thought was a really interesting thing because palate implies gastronomy and culture and taste. So I thought that was very, very noble and open-minded to say, you know, it's about developing a palate, not just, you know, force-feeding them an idea. So tell me a little bit how this whole project came about and what its mission is.
Well, you know, it actually started when I was giving a few workshops in Manila to culinary students. And actually, this whole thing came about when we would start cooking heritage, like the recipes of my grandmother in the restaurant in Sandrion, and when Filipinos would complain that it's not authentic.
Hmm.
And, you know, like, oh, you know, what you do does not taste Filipino. And that was so mind-boggling. The way I was able to figure that out was I remembered that I had not been home for 20 years.
Mm.
So somehow, somewhere during those 20 years, something happened. So why isn't the cooking of my grandmother something that the young Filipinos recognize? So the palates have changed. And during those 2 decades that I was gone, that was also the time when the multinational you know, big time Maggie and, you know, Knorr really bombarded the, you know, the food scene in the Philippines. They have totally controlled the food world. They sponsor everything. They are, you know, every food magazine, they are there. Every food TV cooking show, they're there. So anybody who's anyone in the food world will not go against that.
Mm-hmm.
because they are the ones that give them their business and their means of living. So it's really a battle to win back the soul of our food. And so I have started telling people, you need to look at your palate now, okay, and see what you're tasting. Are you tasting just salt, sugar, and fat?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you tasting the ingredients?
So is this a school of gastronomic science, like in the model of Slow Foods One in Italy, where you're teaching them about the physiology of the tongue and what they should recognize? Or, I mean, what is going to be, how does this plan get implemented? Is it students in a class, in a kitchen?
You know, I think that's where culinary preservation comes in. Because we are going to tie it in with what people were tasting and cooking before, you know. And to me, culinary preservation has three things, right? There are recipes, cooking equipment, and cooking techniques. So I'm trying to bring back this method of cooking with clay pots, cooking with bamboo tubes, wrapping food with banana leaves, you know. And they're all over us. They are so abundant. They're mm-hmm. not going to cost you anything. But people don't think of cooking with them anymore. They buy foil. They buy, you know, stainless steel pans, you know. Mm-hmm. And many poor people cannot afford that. So they buy aluminum pans that are not very healthy for them. So we're trying to bring it back to what they used to eat before. So it's not like you're telling them to eat medicine.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, eat your vegetables. You know, people used to eat vegetables, okay? And my workshop, I had a workshop, all organic vegetables that no one eats. They're herbs that they grow, and they say, oh my God, that grows in my garden.
Hmm.
So all these, I made them just, I just blanched them. No salt, no seasoning. Taste it, and you tell me what it tastes like.
Hmm.
And so many people, foodies, came to me and said, I had never eaten this before. I had never eaten our bean. You know, there's a lime bean that, you know, we have a song, we have a children's rhyme in the Philippines called Bahay Kubo, which means the little house. It's like the little house in the prairie, right?
Mm, one of my
favorite songs. And it lists all the vegetables that people used to grow in their backyard. And most of those people don't eat anymore.
So it was a children's song that kids knew growing up, but then never really put into practice or understand.
Never know what it means.
So now I know you wanted to meet, for instance, with me before we said, let's just talk about it on radio and meet on the radio. So now you're looking to garner energy and money and attention to this project. So how does that work? I mean, can people contribute? Like, are you looking to buy a center? Where would it be? Who would teach it? You know, who's going to be the principal of the school? Is it a, you know, all these kind of detail questions. Like, what is ASA going to look like?
Well, right now, what we're doing is we're trying to build a community kitchen. And we have a pilot project right now and we're partnering with a university, Silliman University, down south in the Visayas. And we partnered with them because the university has had a history of dealing with very poor communities, and they're doing outreach in terms of nutrition. So, you know, you cannot just teach people about nutrition. You have to teach them how to cook properly. So we're going to set it up. We're going to build the kitchen, and we're going to teach mothers how to cook for their families. And then hopefully, this one thing we want to put in are livelihoods.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to teach them. So what we will do is, with their help, plumb the community of their indigenous materials, indigenous ingredients, and heritage recipes. These are flavors that are not foreign.
Mm-hmm.
these are flavors and dishes that their grandparents ate. So it's not like we're telling them to eat something different. So we want to bring them back and develop recipes to make them contemporary and see if they can also market them.
Mm-hmm.
Then it becomes a business. It becomes a livelihood.
So can you tell me, just contextualize how Filipino people eat? Like, you know, here in the States, there's an obesity epidemic. I mean, what is the state of public school food? And do people cook at home? Do they go out? I mean, how does fast food, like, explain, like, the diet of Filipino people, if you
Whatever
could.
Is happening there is a reflection of what is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. You don't even have to imagine it. Just think of what's happening here. It's what's happening there. But the difference with the Philippines is we have a double whammy thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have childhood malnutrition on one end, and then we have the non-communicable diseases that we have here in an industrialized society of obesity, kidney disease, and heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
We have both sides of it.
So how are you going to run the school? I mean, how will this, will you move back there for 6 months a year to see this community kitchen grow? And what's the 10-year vision?
Well, we have hooked up with culinary students who will do that, mm-hmm. They are very, they will develop the modules and they will go and immerse themselves and teach. I don't have to do it. I mean, what I am is just like putting everybody together. I have all these connections. I'm just taking advantage of all the network that I have built through the years, both here and in the Philippines, and putting everybody together. What you will find out is that there is a lot of passion and interest in moving back to something healthy. It's not just me.
Mm-hmm.
You scratch the surface and all these... The organic farming movement is very strong there. In fact, one professor that we talked to said, my worry is that this is going to grow so fast that it's not going to be sustainable.
Hmm.
Because you go everywhere, there are organic farms sprouting up left and right.
Same concept of organic as here?
Well, well, we're trying to tell people, of course, as long as you use organic fertilizers, there's all this whole thing about developing compost and vermiculite and things like that. That's what's happening there. They really don't want to use chemical fertilizers and pesticides. So all of that, or what they're just concerned about is they don't want chemicals
mm-hmm.
into their food, into the earth, and into their water.
Mm-hmm.
It's very surprising. Like, I went down south, right, as I was telling you, and this farmer told me, I would love for Michael Pollan to come here.
Oh, yeah?
It's like, okay, try organic, my best.
He'd say, organic is too expensive. Don't eat it. Well, no, very interesting.
Oh, he would say that, huh?
Yeah, well, he'd be like, if it's expensive, I can't support it. But no, let's see. Michael Pollan's obviously the best. I mean, writer. He's created movements of students and people. So, yeah, getting Pollan out there would be very, very impressive.
No,
it'd be awesome if, Michelle Obama and
exactly.
Michael Pollan did a tour, of some other countries.
Or even Mario Batali would be great,
Yeah.
They love him there.
Yeah?
Yes.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, we got to go over to Del Posto or something and see if we can get Mario on board. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk about holiday traditions, and I want to know about Philippines, and then we're going to have one of the best regional experts here in the States about kind of Christmas traditions, Sam Edwards, call in from Virginia. So we'll be back in a second.
I can't make you take what you don't want to take, babe. And I can't make you stay when you don't want to stay unless it's away. Cause it's all up to you. Just make up your mind, let you decide. Just you, just you and nobody else. You need to do it yourself, babe. I can't make you want to have me anymore. You gotta decide. You need to make up your mind.
Who's that, Jack?
That is Cherry Holmes.
Really?
Yeah, how about that?
Never heard that sound before.
You keep God, it, she's keep great. It fresh.
We're picking bands from below the Mason-Dixon line for Sam Edwards. Sam! Did that sound familiar, those instruments, the banjo, things like that?
What's the question?
Oh, yeah. No, you have to have heard the song. How are you, Sam? Oh, thanks for calling
good.
In.
Good.
Where are
you?
How about you? I'm good. Where are you?
I'm at Smokehouse.
Smokehouse in Virginia, in Surrey, Virginia?
Yeah, in Surrey, Virginia.
Very good.
Kind of southeastern part of Virginia.
So we have Amy Bessa and Romy Dorotan in studio here, and we just got a real fascinating lens into the life of kind of, you know, Filipino cuisine. They go through a lot of the same problems that we are here with the obesity epidemic, fast food, multinational companies, loss of nutrition. But there must still be certain traditions that are adhered to. So I want to ask before we turn to Sam, what are the Filipino equivalents of the Thanksgiving turkey, the Christmas ham, things of that nature?
We have the ham, the Christmas ham.
Yeah.
That is a center of the centerpiece of a Christmas table.
Because, of course, there are a lot of pigs in the Philippines. Pork is a big part of that.
Yes. And because the two major influences on Philippine food are Spain and China, and both are pork eaters.
Mm.
So we got the double whammy again.
So now take us through, how is that ham prepared? Is it smoked and cured in the traditional American sense, or boiled? I mean, how does the is there a traditional recipe across the archipelago?
We got that from the United States also. You know, so the traditional one was a Chinese ham, which is done in the style of Virginia ham.
Hmm.
And I remember when I was a kid, we would buy these gorgeous hams, or they would be given to us as gifts, and we would have to soak them for several days and then simmer them in pineapple juice.
Hmm.
And then, since many people did not have big ovens, they would heat these metal spatulas, and we used to call them plancha, which means iron.
Mm-hmm.
So you put them in a hot coal, and then, you know, simmer the ham and you remove the skin and you have that fat, you sprinkle all this brown sugar or white sugar or whatever, and then you heat this spatula and you put it on the fat and the sugar so that it caramelizes.
Hmm. Very similar. So, Sam, what is the tradition? What is the traditional Virginia ham? I mean, in the most strict sense of the word.
Well, their roots come from the need for... It was developed before there was refrigeration, so we dry salt the ham, similar to what you do with a prosciutto serrano. That's how they cured meat. They would typically slaughter the animal in the cold months, put it in cure so that it would preserve the meat, so it would be saved for later in the year when they would, so they'd have meat to eat year round. For whatever reason, the Virginia ham took a foothold here early on in the 1600s, 1700s. I think because the environment, the weather conditions, and so forth, were conducive to producing a great product. So that tradition's been handed down through the generations up till today, which there are about three of us left in the state of Virginia still producing country hams.
And is there a common technique across the three and that can be traced back all the way, or is it just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the way the Spaniards and the Italians and Germans and Chinese, really, it goes back 3,000 years ago where they were the first recorded culture, at least in recorded history, that were curing meats like that. Where specifically did it come from in Virginia? Certainly there was a Spanish influence, English influence, and the American Indian. I mean, the American Indian had figured out somehow to how to dry cure fish and wild game. So that's kind of, that transferred to curing pork.
Now, just to name a few random people, but, you know, people we like, Nancy Newsom in Kentucky and Al yep. Benton in Tennessee. Yep. Is there a difference there? I mean, is Virginia, is there regional differences of curing hams that are like specific to the individual?
Yeah, there's no doubt that everybody has their own little nuances, little things that they do differently. And the environment or the terroir has an impact on the flavor profile of the ham. If I were to take our exact recipe and go to Kentucky and cure it, it's going to have a different flavor profile because the bacteria and the environment support in that area, the good stuff that ferments the meat, will impart a different flavor in Kentucky and Tennessee and Virginia. And then you throw in the fact that Nancy has her own thing and Al Benton has his own thing as far as his little parts of the recipe. It it makes everybody's a little bit different. I was at an event last night. They had some of these imported Spanish hams. It was a $3,000 ham.
Wow.
And I ate it. And it's very good. Don't get me wrong, but it's
still $3,000.
It's very similar to what we do in Virginia.
Oh, yeah, I know. I love Sam. Sam's always said that the, you know, Europeans and him do the same thing, you know, and it's just a perception thing as to why those ones command that type of price. But I also loved it because we sell a bunch of prosciuttos from you guys and like Al Benton and stuff like that at our new Heritage Meat Shop at Essex Street Market. And I was like, Sam, you know, I really think you've got the best. The only person that comes close is Nancy Newsom. And Sam responded that damn river, it makes it so delicious because Nancy Newsom has this river right going through basically her property, and it really instills. And I thought it was such a confirmation for the concept of terroir and how, you know, regional and environmental nuances can affect the taste, that his first instinct was the river, you know. And I don't think most Americans really perceive, you know, that a river could turn something into a great taste. Now, Sam, is there differences of appreciating? Like, have your regular clients and local people, because I know you sell your hams at shops there, do they appreciate the taste of the Suriano? I mean, are there certain tastes?
Yeah,
that
I mean, this event I had last night, there were a couple of chefs there. I mean, I was just attending it, but there were a couple of chefs there and other, you know, end users, private citizens that came up to me and said how much they appreciated what we were doing. And I had to, as they were explaining about these Spanish hams, very similar to what we're doing with the Heritage meats. They were breed specific, which we're using the Berkshire breed. They're pasture raised. They're certified humane. They're allowed to roam so many acres per hog, so they're happy pigs. That's one of the things they focused on, which in the end result produces a better tasting product. If you're looking for the creme de la creme, we're trying to make it the best you can possibly make. Those kind of factors are important.
Very interesting. And what about other traditions? Do you have poultry? Do you have the Christmas goose and the duck or whatever? I mean, Sam, you're more just the ham guy, but I mean, I asked Amy and Romy as well. What are the major holidays and the associated food in the Philippines? There's Christmas ham, you say, or holiday ham?
Well, you know, they all... they follow a lot of our holidays here.
It's so
you'd be very surprised. I mean, I was surprised that people were celebrating. Some people were celebrating Thanksgiving there, and like for what? You know,
yeah. Like, that really makes no sense.
Doesn't make sense.
Now, Sam, how many hams will you move in the month of December? Or I know it's hard to put a number on it.
30,000 to 40,000.
30,000 to 40,000 hams moved out of Sam Edwards' facility, and that's all. You must be up on UPS's wall of appreciation because most of those hams go out UPS, right?
UPS and a little bit by Federal Express and a handful by the Postal Service that people requested. Of course, some of the you know, heritage products are going out that that way too. Plus, we ship year round by UPS. A lot of them, like, you know, in New York, Fairway Market, mm-hmm. and Duluth and so forth, they use our product.
I just got to ask, because 40,000 amps is amazing. What? Who was the first person to introduce the e-commerce idea to your facility? Because I think you're the first and the biggest of the kind of old school guys to say, to have seen the potential of the web to move your product. When did that happen?
Well, I don't know. It was just, we saw other companies doing it that were in the clothing business and said, well, I think this is back in the 90s. We just have been stumbling our way through that, trying to figure out what people want to do. And the consumer ends up dictating the direction. And more people shop online. So,
well, talking about websites, let's go first. Sam, give your website so people can log on to it. I'm sure Jack will tag it. But for our listeners, it's swallaceedwardsandsons.com?
No. Well, first of all, if you can't find it in your neighborhood, like in New York, it would be Fairway or Dean and Duluth. And Murray's Cheese is the website.
And Heritage Meat Shop.
Pardon me?
Heritage Meat Shop.
Oh, yeah, Heritage Meat Shop. How can I forget that? Oh, my gosh.
Jack, cut it.
VirginiaTraditions.com.
VirginiaTraditions.com. And does that have the Surrey line as well as the other lines on there?
Yes.
Fantastic. And your website?
PurpleYamNYC.com.
PurpleYamNYC.com. And that also has information about ASA?
Not yet. Right. I will put it on there. But we're serving the red wattle ham.
Ooh, very nice.
It's so delicious.
That's great. Red wattle, a rare breed. Well, we have a big month for radio. We're really excited. Michael Pollan is going to be coming on next week. So that's very, very exciting for us. And Jack, actually, I think what we should do is ask our host to submit questions to us.
Yes.
And then, you know, we'll select the best 10 questions, and that's what we'll ask Michael. Next week, we have Robert Sterling on, who is the owner of Hominy Grill way down south. So we love that he buys from us. You know Robert, right, Sam?
Yeah. He's in a neat little restaurant
near
Charleston.
By the way, Sam, I was thinking of you. I went to Court Street Grocers in Cobble Hill, which is really one of the most lovely grocery shops, and they have hundreds of sauces, and Edwards is everywhere. And they had a new breakfast sandwich, which I ate today, which is your heritage sausage. And
great.
Yeah, so it was really kind of cool to see the Edwards name out there, independent of me or anything. It's just they tended towards the product. So, yeah, we'll have a very interesting thing. We have all our shows. Any big news, Jack, that we want to announce before we head out today for December on HRN?
For December, look forward to January. We may have some programming changes, some improvements, more website changes on the way.
We'll cancel some of the more mediocre, let's listen to shows.
We'll see how the main course fares.
Oh, that hurts. Well, anyway, Sam, we're always, never a day goes by where we don't appreciate your support of Heritage and also the radio network. And
vice versa.
Hopefully I'll see you at the Fancy Food Show in San Francisco. It'll be my last single outing to the West Coast as a single man.
Well, that's without here. But, you know, Anne's still kind of on the fence about that, I think.
Yeah, no, she still has 3 weeks to break up with me before the marriage. And we, of course, will be serving Edwards ham there. So thanks, Sam. Thanks, Amy. Thanks, Romy. And we hope to have all of you back soon. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.